Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
Good morning. Happy Mother's Day. Mother's Day is full of complications. There are people who, for whom this is a really hard day for many reasons. Maybe not being able to be that mother, maybe because there are really some difficult things related to being mother or what mother means in your life. And I think we know that. But, you know, a couple weeks ago.
It's hard for that mother
right now. It's hard for her. It's just, everybody pay attention to Angie right now. Does that make it easier? Hey, this is real life, and we want real life here. So, you know, we'll take you any way we can have you, Elijah, that little one. He's getting baptized in a couple weeks, too, by the way. So that's exciting. But, you know, a couple weeks ago, we talked about the fact, like, as human beings, why do we get all upset about the hundreds of things that make us different instead of celebrating the thousands of things that we all share? And what that video is about is one of the experiences every one of us shared. We all came out of a mother like that. And I don't think any of us remember it, but it is one of those human realities that all of us are about. And this whole idea of what means to be giving birth is so important. And it's more than just physically giving birth to a child, but it has to do with all the things that we give birth to in life. We had a couple of weeks here for a series and months ago, and we looked at it. Well, so the first week is Mother's Day, and then there's this in-between week, and the third week is Memorial Day, kind of remembering. It's just like, well, hold it. We got Mother's Day and Memorial Day, and then there's something in the middle, right? So we thought, this is a life cycle. So we're going to take these 3 weeks and look at this life cycle, and today we're really focusing on this idea of what does it mean to be giving birth, and then you really can't talk about giving birth without this process of letting go, because as soon as you do, give birth, you need to start letting go, which is hard. So we're going to do that, and joining me today in our conversation is Aaron Tripolino, also known as Rudolph.
Greg, that wasn't nice.
That wasn't nice.
I thought about wearing the red nose, but it doesn't fit over the little bandit. I had some skin cancer removed. Everything's fine, but
can we hear you?
Ridiculous.
Erin, while we get that figured out, Erin is both a mother of three, but she's also a doula. And I believe a couple days ago, you just had your 40th delivery.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. 40.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. So just maybe she knows something about what we're talking about today. Justin, on the other hand, is a father. Father of two, and he's also an entrepreneur. Justin has helped start and been involved with and started his own businesses many times, and has a whole realm. Plus, both of you are really good thinkers about life in general. So glad to have you join us in this conversation, and we'll try to make some room for you folks as well. So where we want to start out is if you're watching during that video, the first moments of birth happening. And just the overwhelming emotion. There was more emotion in that minute and a half of video than most people. Like, I don't know if I can absorb all that. It's just like overwhelming. But why do we give birth to things, to children? And what do we think is going on? Why did you give birth to three children?
I wanted to. I don't know about Chris.
I hope you talked us over.
I was ready to start a family, and I wasn't so much thinking about the baby and the birth as much as the family that would be someday of even like older children. And I was really excited to just create that and move on to that part of our lives.
So is this investment in some future dream, something that could be there for you?
Right. And we spent a lot of time thinking about the things that we wanted to teach our children and the different things that we would do with them, the fun activities, and
So that sounds like you were starting a small business called The Family.
Right.
Yeah. So, Justin, how about you? Like, I don't know, from the family or the business. Like, why do people do this? Why have you done it both with the family and businesses? But why do you think people do all this?
My answer would be very different for a family versus a business, I suppose. The family just always felt obvious to me, I guess. and Aaron, not this Aaron, but my wife, Aaron, were, you know, very excited to start a family, and I feel like I sort of, in my brain, skipped over, like, the hard part of, like, 0 to 5, and just thought about, like, the after 5.
Do you have one that's over 5 yet?
Just barely.
So, yeah, you don't really know yet.
Yeah.
It gets easier, right?
Yeah, as soon as she turned 5, it was easy.
Everybody just nod and say yes.
Thank you, thank you, yes.
Oh, piece of cake after 5. Yeah, anyway, so you just skipped over that and jumped to the easy part.
Right. Yeah. Just the part that I could imagine, I suppose. Like, that's what I have a memory of, being a kid. But no, I mean, I like the 0 to 5 just fine as well. And the last couple months have been great. Starting a business is probably a completely different set of reasons. I mean, each business that I have started, I've probably started for various reasons, but I often joke that if you're going to start a business, there has to be something fundamentally wrong with you, and I mean that sincerely. Like, there is something wrong with you if you want to start a business. It's more work. It's, usually less reward, much more risk, and, you know, all along the way, it's just treacherous.
Like parenting.
A little bit like parenting, perhaps, yeah. But for me, starting a business is I really like to disrupt established things. I have a business in commercial real estate. I do a lot of work in healthcare, both of which have very well-established, I don't know what you call them, players in the market. And I really like starting things that have the potential to disrupt those really well-established things, and ideally along the way, make the experience or life better for the users of these things. I usually make digital things. So that's usually my goal when starting a business.
Okay, so you like to disrupt things, but from what I understand, you don't just do it in order to disrupt. You feel like there's something that needs disrupting.
Yes. I don't know if I'm sure all of these people are very happy with their healthcare experiences. They think everything's great about healthcare. Yeah. Sorry, guys. Yes, I think there's something broken about healthcare. Commercial real estate is a little bit different. There's something very broken, but not everyone experiences it. But there is a very well-established hierarchy of how things work, and I would argue that most of these people don't benefit from that established hierarchy. So I would like to break that up and make that better for people. But then also for me, there's personal reasons for starting businesses. Like, I like to have control of things. I like to decide which way the thing I'm working on is going to go. And so if I start my own stuff, I have a better chance of making that happen.
So the hard part of a business, I think, is probably true. I mean, when you start a business, that's, you know, you're kind of 24/7. All the resources, all the energy, all the time, all the favors you can call in. I mean, that's what it's about, right?
Yes.
We kind of glossed over that on having children, though. I mean, if more of us knew what we were getting into and we had children, the population may go down. Yeah. we're gracefully, like, don't realize what it's going to be. But somehow we kind of come to it. And then the birthing process of having the baby be completely in the mom, you know, portable. Some people have, you know, easier or harder health situation with that, but
my part's easy, right? Being pregnant is super easy.
Yep, piece of cake.
Yeah. Yep. So, what about that? How does this, like, how hard giving birth to another human being is? What, as a doula, you see this all the time, and as a mother,
how hard is it to give birth?
Yeah, like on a scale of 1 to 10.
We could do a poll.
Is it as hard as washing the car? Like,
exactly. It's
no, I don't.
You know what we need up here? And more men. We need more men up here, I think. Yeah.
Where are we going with this?
Not just childbirth, obviously. I mean, yeah. There's nothing that you could probably, compare to childbirth, but just this investment, like what it means then to raise this little kid, that you have this vision of a family, but now what you have is this little kid that is dependent on you 24 hours a day and doesn't want to let you sleep, doesn't want to let you shower, doesn't want to let you do anything, can't communicate, can't tell you what's right, what's wrong.
It's a complete life change. You're not necessarily a different person, but you become different through that process. And yeah, everything that you knew is different after you have a child.
Right. So,
So one of the things, as we're talking about this giving birth, and all of you, I mean, your imaginations are filling in all these blanks really easily, I'm sure, about, you know, like why you do it and, you know, what you signed up for and then what you actually get and how hard that is. But you very quickly have to get to this point where you start losing control. Like, you cannot make sure everything goes the way you want it to go. And part of that's personality dependent, part of that is just like what happens with nature. But like on the outline, it says, you know, when we give birth, we create possibilities and find joy. And that's like really important. And maybe evolution has programmed us that way. Like, you know, there's something about this baby that you're just ecstatic. As soon as the baby is born, how many of you experience this? As soon as we had a child, the child could only be 2 hours old, and I felt like I had known that child my entire life. Like, I have a hard time going back to saying, when I was in high school, did I really not know my kid? I mean, it's actually, really? Seriously? Did I, you know? So there's this bonding that goes on, and we need to do that. And I think the same thing happens in business, like this excitement, this energy. I mean, the reason that you have all that energy is that the passion behind this and the I get to change something, or for some people, maybe they're a little bit more cynical about it. They just want to make a lot of money. Have you run into those as well?
Yeah, a few, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that it's that passion about a specific subject matter or, you know, whatever the business is that is required, also having something fundamentally wrong with you that keeps you going throughout, I mean, the really hard parts of having a business. Similarly, we were talking about having kids. They happen to be really cute, and that's helpful when you need to love them even though they're being obnoxious.
That's right. Even when things aren't going well with the business. And there are a lot of other things that we can talk about. Right now, we're just talking business and birthing children, but I think there are a lot of other places, and we'll talk to that, and your minds can go there as well. But so the other thing, though, is that we create these possibilities. We see ourselves creating possibilities. We find joy in the process of giving birth. But then at the same time, and these are essential, is that we develop attachments. You know, you're attached to your children. Like, you will do anything for your child and so on, and you identify, you know your child's cry over other children's cries and so on. But then, and you also develop expectations very quickly. And those are both also, I think, very, very positive things that we need to do to develop those kinds of expectations and those attachments. But they're also kind of dangerous because they are part, I think, well, maybe this is a good chance to kind of go to the business world on this. Your attachments and your expectations for how this business is supposed to develop can almost be the guarantee that it won't succeed.
Mm. Yeah, I often joke that every time I start a business or a new product or, you know, whatever, the first release of whatever it is that we've built is almost always wrong. It is virtually never right, and it's how it's wrong, or, you know, the little piece of it that might be right, that you use to sort of pivot around and figure out what actually is right. So if I were to cling to the thing that we initially released as the thing that it has to be, it would never be a business, because people don't want that thing that we initially released. We figure out what they want and pivot around until we really have a business or a product that they like and use. And so it's required that you allow it to go there in order for it to be a successful business eventually.
Right, and at some point then that's a process even of letting it go, which is, you might have heard some giggles if you look at the screen.
Mm. Yeah, it's a lot like that. Yeah.
But so that orientation of 90% or a vast majority of what you pictured when you started the business is not going to be what it looks like when it actually happens. But at the same time, when you started, did you have a full-blown image in your mind? This is what it's going to be like in 10 years when it's incredibly successful.
Sure, it's just usually wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But and that's neat. So it's essential that you have that full-blown vision of the future, but it's also essential that you know that it's wrong.
Yes, and I mean, and there are some things like, you know, I would argue that for a business, you know, it's my job to set the mission, the vision, and the values of that business. But it's not my job to say the button has to go there and it always has to stay there. You know, that can change over time. But it's the mission, vision, values stuff that hopefully will at least remain intact somewhat over the course of 10 years. But how we achieve that mission, vision, and values, it has to change over time.
Right. So when we're with children, it's kind of the same thing. I mean, when Shiloh, Avdon, or Brielle were born, did you have like kind of this picture of them as an adult and what their life might be like?
Somewhat, but I wasn't too attached to anything, mm-hmm. I guess, because you don't know what you're getting into until you start it, and so much of it is the day-to-day. I think that's a little bit different than a business where you do start maybe with your mission and your vision, and with kids you just jump into it and then start going. But there are definitely some visions that we have for them.
Right, you know, and I never did too. I never thought about my kids. Well, when they're 30, I hope they have this job and they get married and are living there and this kind of house. I mean, I didn't ever do that either. But at the same time, I kind of had this maybe unformed picture of what I thought was, and it was frankly, it's probably more a reflection of me than of them, you know, and that's maybe what I needed to let go of. You had the example of being at the park and seeing a dad.
Yeah, I mean, the other day I was on my bike riding by Lake Hiawatha, and there was a dad with what I would guess is probably a 1.5-year-old and probably a 3-year-old, and he was playing golf with the 1.5-year-old and 3-year-old at a little, you know,
club. How was he dressed?
Yeah, he had like the perfect golfing outfit on, a Titleist hat, and it was like he is clearly wants those kids to be golfers. He just really wants them to be golfers.
So start them young.
Yeah.
How many of you had luck with that? but I think there's a real life lesson there. And maybe those kids will, and maybe they won't. But there's a difference between, I want my kids to be golfers when they grow up, and there can be some really good reasons why I would want my kids to be golfers. It's something we can enjoy. It's a good, you know, pastime. We share that together and stuff like that. But there's something kind of restrictive about it, you know? What if my kid doesn't like golf, you know? Like a normal person.
That's good. Let's insult all the golfers that are here.
I'm an equal opportunity offender, remember? Actually, this is a line kind of right in the middle of your outline. It says, you know, I think this is what we're trying to get at with this, is we have influence over the things that we give birth to. And I think we're supposed to have influence there. But you have a choice. You can have influence like, I'm going to try to control, I'm going to make sure that you have these certain outcomes. Or I can say, well, what are these undergirding things that are really important to me? And I think you've named, like with business, mission, vision, values. With kids, I maybe would say, well, it's like values, it's like character, rather than, well, I want them to want this sport, I want them to have that job, I want them to, have this income and things like that. And for me, like, if I can use my influence to help form my child's character, I don't frankly care what career they end up in. Because if they're a person of character, what they do, they're going to do that in a great way. And it's a good thing for me to learn how to get along with that. But this is this scale then. This is this letting go scale. So you give birth to a business, and you are CEO, CFO, COO, custodian, widget maker, coder, programmer, you know, whatever it is. I mean, you are everything. And so you have total control. When your baby is born, it can do nothing for itself. You know, you do absolutely everything for this child. And as they grow, as it matures, they start having, they can take care of some of their own needs gradually. They start having a voice in the whole process. They start learning that magic two-letter word, no, you know, and stuff like that. So that control morphs to influence, right? I mean, we all know those examples of, like, trying to keep control over our children, you know, and not choosing our battles, and of just, like, trying to do that. But gradually, I think we realize we lose control, but we can still have influence. And then gradually, that influence also, as that child or as that business or whatever it is, starts maturing, your influence even really wanes.
It's certainly less direct. And we talked about this a lot. We struggled with, like, what is that? So if you start with control or managing, whatever, however you want to think about that, then you move to more influence, maybe more aggressive or active influence. Then what is that last stage of it? Like, none of my kids really rely on me for anything anymore. Or they don't, I should put it this way, they don't need to rely on me for anything. yeah, there's all kinds of thoughts going through my head that I'm having the wisdom not to say right now.
Wise, yes.
I mean, my youngest is 23, my oldest is 31, and but there is still relationship there. I mean, at least that's the goal, right? And if you keep on this, like, I'm going to manage, I'm going to control because I'm concerned about the outcome. I don't want to risk something going wrong. I don't want to risk that they don't play golf. I don't want to risk that they have problems with drugs. I don't want to risk that they get mixed with the wrong friends. I don't want to risk that they don't become a doctor, you know, whatever it is. I think things start getting ugly. And that last thing there, and it's already up there on the screen, is relationship. I think you have a relationship the whole time, obviously, right? I mean, there's influence going on the whole time. But I think the goal is that you are in relationship. And the really neat thing there is it's very mutual. I think relationships have to be very, very mutual. I don't know, does that reflect? Sorry, I got on a long tirade.
That sounds right to me, yeah, sure.
Okay, well, I'll just, you jump in on this, but another word that I really felt was important here is the word trust. That you, as the one who gives birth, at one point you supply everything for this thing that you gave birth. And gradually, you simply can influence it. And you have to be very judicious. You decide, well, what influence should I have, can I have? And what's appropriate? What's helpful? Because I am having to let go. I want this person, I want this business, I want whatever this is to have its own life. So I have to do that. And at the last point, at a certain point, you simply are in a trusting relationship. I trust that what I did, I trust the vision that I shared, the values that I shared, are now being owned, and they are finding their expression. Even things that I cannot see it. Like, I am not that person. I am no longer in control of this business. I cannot see exactly how it is living out the vision and the values that I tried to place there, but I have to live in trust that it is there. And frankly, we have no choice other than to do that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think a business example of that is that you start a business and it's small, and, you know, we all know examples of these, right? Like, I mean, Apple, Google, Uber, you name it. And they are very large businesses now, and the founder of that business, in some cases, isn't around anymore. But you still see some of them and the mission and the vision and the values that they set up in that business around, right? I mean, Steve Jobs isn't the CEO of Apple anymore, but still embodies a lot of the things that he put in motion. And sometimes, I think Uber is a good example of this, that the person who started the business probably isn't the one that should scale it and make it really big, because the skill set is just different. And so you would hope that the CEO of Uber would instill enough mission, vision, and values in the business that could keep going even when he's not there or, you know, has less influence or less control than he did when it first started.
So you maybe would say that he wasn't able to let go.
So some would make that argument about Travis, the CEO of Uber, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that is really a critical thing, is like, how, you know, can I trust this enough to let it go and let it have its own life and let someone else that is ready for this, this stage. I think you're experimenting with that with kids is difficult. So that's another piece on the outline here, is that letting go involves real risk. So it's so easy. To me, this is a really important thing to talk about, because it's so easy to talk about this very academically, kind of say, yeah, you have to let go, and the child is going to have to find its own way, your business has to find its own way, you know, what will be, sort of thing. But it really does involve real risk. And you're not only risking your expectations for how this is going to turn out, but you're actually risking the well-being. I mean, that's why letting go, I think, when you can even let yourself out of the equation, I'm not just trying to realize myself through my kids, but I'm actually worried about my children's well-being. I mean, we all here in this room are probably pretty close to situations where someone has let go of something and had to say, you now have to find your own way through life, and it has not gone well. It has not gone well. But there really wasn't much choice. I mean, you could not control the outcome of that person's life anymore. And that's hard. That's hard.
It doesn't sound very hopeful.
Right? Well, I think oftentimes that's worst case scenario, right? Like, I mean, that is
the worst case scenario, yeah.
We talked yesterday, I mean, one of my fears is that I have lots of addiction in my life. And so, you know, I have some fear around, what's that?
In your life.
Yes, I am not an addict, but in my family's life. I know lots of addicts.
And you've been very proactive personally to be careful.
It's true, yes. I have never, I'll reveal this about myself. I've never smoked, drank alcohol, used a drug, none of any kind, mostly out of fear of addiction. And so I have that same fear for my girls, right? That, like, I've seen terrible things that addiction can do. If I have no idea if this will happen or not, but like if that becomes an issue, I will struggle to deal with that, right? Like letting go means that I will have to give them some space to, you know, figure some of these things out for themselves. But, the worst case scenario, the really negative thing is that, like, you know, potentially something really terrible could happen, and it happens all the time to addicts. And so, like, that is the risk of letting go, right? That, like, that can happen. Bad things can happen. Mm-hmm.
So, and to play that out in real time, so it's one thing to say, well, I can let go of my child liking soccer instead of golf. You know, so I'm not going to control what sport they sign up for. But how will I make sure that if there is a genetic predisposition for addiction in my family, how will I make sure that my child doesn't go that route? I chose to never smoke, drink, take any drugs because I didn't trust myself. So
I have those expectations of them. Then,
I will have those expectations. So I will lecture them from, you know, you will never do this. You will never do this. You will never do this, only to guarantee that they will do that.
Yes, right.
The way for them to follow it is through example. So, you know, there's a lot, we haven't made a lot of religious or, you know, biblical God type tie-ins here. I frankly don't think we need to. It is so obvious. But we did, in the month of January, we did a series called New Grooves. If you think back on that, and we really focus on the book of Deuteronomy, and in a couple of chapters, and in those chapters was this little passage. This is, it follows the Shema, and you'll remember that, right? So I'm not going to worry about that, but let me just read this to you. God is speaking after, giving this command to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, your mind, and your neighbor as yourself, and then goes on, keep these words that I am commanding you today in your heart. Recite them to your children, and talk about them when you are at home and when you're away, when you lie down and when you rise. This kind of stuff, you're just supposed to, like, you know, bomb them with it? You know, just like flood them with this? No, I think there's just saying, like, this is more like live this. Saturate your children. Like, what is most important to you? Immerse your children. Let them live in it. And it isn't lecture them. It's like talk about it. Let's have conversations about it. Let's live with this when you lie down and when you rise up in the morning. I mean, it's like, let this be the waters that your children swim in. If this is really important, live it with your children so that they would carry this on, knowing that they will make decisions. But how did you pass this on? Like, how did you exercise that influence? And, what role, how will you do that with your kids on that very obvious, you know, kind of issue of addiction? Or how would you do it on matters of, I think you said when we were talking earlier, like, what is the biggest value you have for your kids when they grow up?
I want them to be kind, compassionate people.
Yeah.
They don't really care about anything else. As long as they care for people. And
so every time
nice.
They don't, you'll hit them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Because you kind of feel that, like, you're supposed to be nice.
You go say, sir, your sister, you're back in your bedroom for 20 minutes. Yeah, that is such a neat message. Like, if you want your kids to be kind and compassionate more than anything else, that is not something you can ever make them do.
Right.
I mean, it's antithetical.
But if they're experiencing that in their family and in other relationships, then hopefully they'll pick that up and want to be that way, I would think.
And I'm not expecting you to say that you are perfectly a kind and compassionate person.
I am.
Sorry to disappoint.
But you do a good job. But did you get there by only being kind and compassionate your whole life?
Probably not.
Right. Probably. In fact, if we dug around, you could probably come up with
some stories.
Right. I
remember biting my sister once. So.
Oh. Right. Yeah. That sounds horrible.
Once. But, you know, so part of the way, you know, one of the ways that they learn to be kind and compassionate is by trying, seeing what it's like when
practicing
you're not.
Practicing and figuring it out.
Yeah, and maybe trying the other shoe to right. see how that fits and what it feels like. There's a passage at the bottom here, and this comes from Isaiah chapter 55, where God is speaking here and sharing, I think, a really big vision of humanity and of God's role with us, kind of as a giving birth and letting go sort of scenario. And you have to realize that if the mind of God that at least this passage is trying to summarize sees the big picture. It knows what's going to happen. It knows that we do not follow the script, all right? We do not become exactly, none of us as individually or as a society become exactly who God would have wanted. But yet God says this, "My thoughts aren't your thoughts, nor are my ways your ways, says the Lord." You know, I kind of know better than you. I could probably tell you what you're supposed to do. We as parents maybe could say the same thing. "For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts and your thoughts." Okay, all that said then. "For you know how the rain and the snow come down from heaven, and they don't return there until they've watered the earth, making it bring forth and sprout, giving seed to the sower and bread to the eater." So in other words, you know, what gets sent to the earth, it does what it's supposed to do. Then God says, "So shall my word be that goes out from my mouth. It won't return to me empty." My influence isn't going to come back, not having done what it needs to do. It shall accomplish that which I intended and succeed in the thing for which I sent it. It's interesting that God, at least as summed up in this passage, can say, "I have that kind of confidence. I have that kind of hope. I can trust that this happened, even though I am not going to run your lives. I am going to let you make mistakes. It's going to be more about forgiveness, assessing what wasn't working and figuring out what could. It's going to be about trying and failing and trying again, and it's going to work. It's going to be good."
It might look really different than what you expected, and I feel like we talked about a lot of that with your businesses, that maybe the final product is nothing like what you set out for it to be.
Right.
But it was still, like, the original intention was still accomplished in some way.
Yeah, sometimes. I think that's the risk, right? I mean, there is risk here. Like, lots of businesses fail. A lot of them that I've started have failed. And there's risk in letting go of these things that, like, they might not go well. But, I mean, often they do, or they just look different than we anticipated.
So I just want to leave us with these last few things. So, this would be a good thought experiment. Like, how do you apply this to other things? How do you apply this to going on vacation? You know, you give birth to this idea. You invest money, a lot of energy to go, getting ready to, you know, go on this trip and have this ideal experience. Has anybody had their vacation turn out the way they planned it? Sometimes it's better. It's always different. You know, you give birth to the idea and then you let go. I think art is a lot like this. A couple of Easters ago, we saw Eddie Hamilton paint this beautiful, beautiful mural during our Easter gathering. And at the end of the gathering, he took a roller and white paint and painted the whole thing back over. And all of us were going, "No, don't do that." You know, he's like, "You just created something beautiful," but he could let go of it and let it become something else next week. You know, there's so many places, I think, where this idea of having our attachments and having our expectations are so important to creating something beautiful. But then this art of letting go, this art of letting things be who they are and differentiating them from ourselves. So the last thing here, and I'll leave this with you, is, so what empowers us to weather the giving birth and letting go process gracefully? And I choose that word gracefully very specifically. In a way that kind of holds it lightly, it stays involved, creates relationship, lives with, wrestles with, stays a part of it, but doesn't try to control it. How do we do that gracefully? And in our conversations, we came up with three things. And the first is community. That is, people that can support you along the way. My guess is everyone here has experienced that with people from this community, but you've also done it with your families and other friends. But one of the things that allows us to get through that is other people. And that really kind of goes hand in hand with the next one, which is perspective. this ability to remember that this is a process and that we're in it for the long haul. We don't have to have the result right now. And my kid is a screw up right now. But
which one?
I think we all feel like it, huh? I was to my kids, you know, my parents. But this is right now. I mean, it's a process, right? It's a process, and as hard as it is. And then the last is gratitude. And to me, gratitude is maybe the biggest piece of this whole puzzle. Like, how can we live in this in the moment enough to give thanks for the life that is happening right now, even though it isn't what we expected, even though there's a lot of hurt and sadness and pain involved with it? How do we live in this, in that place that says there is always something about life that is good and sacred and holy? And to be able to, maybe that is where hope is, even when it feels like the worst case scenario is playing out. I guess maybe that's the closest I can come to that. So there's a lot more hands and legs to this, but thanks for being part of our conversation today. So let's give Aaron and Justin a hand here.
Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast valuable, please pass it along to others. And we'd love to hear from you too. You can email us at info@jacobs-well.net or message Jacobs Well Minneapolis on Facebook. We see what we do as a community really making a difference for people. Since you're listening, you probably have too. If you'd like to make a donation to support this work, you can find ways at jacobs-well.net/give. Thanks. Listen again next week or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10:30.